We are doing Parashat Chukat, and we'll do a quick overview of the parasha. The parasha begins with the statute of Para Aduma, that red cow which is slaughtered, burnt, and the ashes are used to purify anyone who is a Tamei Meis, defiled from deceased, from a corpse. And after the story of Para Aduma, we have the story of how a person becomes defiled and how a person becomes pure. And then Miriam passes away. Just before Miriam passes away, the Torah says an interesting line. The Torah says, everyone made it to Midbar Tzin. The Torah is saying that those who were supposed to die in the desert have finished dying. That's it. We passed the 40 years. And two parashios. And Shlach was decreed we would have the 40 years. Korach, Chukas. And now in the very beginning of Chukas, we skip over the 40 years. We don't know too much about what happened then. Miriam passes away. We don't have water. Everyone comes complaining to Moshe. We wish we would have died. And what you bring us out here for? Moshe and Aaron come to the entrance of Ohel Moed. And God tells Moshe, take the staff. Gather everyone together with Aaron, your brother. Go to the rock and talk to the rock. And water will come out and you'll give everyone to drink. Moshe takes the staff. He and Aaron gather everyone. And Moshe says to them, listen here, you rebellious ones. Should we get water out of this rock? And he lifts his hand and hits the rock twice. And then plenty of water comes out. And God tells Moshe and Aaron, being that you didn't trust me, you didn't sanctify me, that's why you two will not bring the nation to the land that I've given them. These are the waters of fights where Am Yisrael fought against Hashem, and Hashem was sanctified in their midst, that Moshe and Aaron are going to end up dying because of all this fighting. And that brings us to Ravi. What did Moshe and Aaron do wrong? What did Aaron do wrong? Aaron seems to be an innocent bystander. So we'll get back to that. Moshe sends messengers to the king of Edom and says, so says your brother Israel. You know what's all our troubles, what we've been through. And now God's taken us out of Egypt. Let us go through your land. We won't harm you. We will be good for business. Let us just go through your land to enter the land of Israel. And Edom says, don't you dare. And if you do, I come out with a sword towards you. And they say, we'll take whatever path you want. We'll make it good for you. And Edom comes out with a large army with his nation. And he refuses to let us go through. And now we have to take a long route around Edom. So we come to a double mountain. We come to northern Israel. And there's this mountain that looks like a figure eight. Yes, a double mountain, one on top of the other. And God tells Moshe, it's time for Aaron to pass away. He's not coming into the land of Israel because of your rebelliousness by those waters. Take Aaron and his son Elazar, go up that mountain with them. Aaron will remove the clothing of the kahuna and dress Elazar, his son, and Aaron will pass away. So that's what Moshe does. They go up. Everyone sees Moshe, Aaron, and Elazar go up the mountain. Moshe helps Aaron remove the clothing of Kahuna. He dresses Elazar. Aaron passes away. Moshe and Elazar come down. And everyone's looking. Hey, wait, three went up, only two went down. And they get the hint. And everyone starts weeping. All of Israel unites and weeping for Aaron for 30 days. They don't travel. They weep for Aaron. Now the Kanani heard that we were coming by. And they attacked. And they captured. Who'd they capture? Maid. And Am Yisrael made a promise. If we succeed in taking them down, so everything we capture will be designated for God. We won't enjoy any of it.
Who did they capture?
One maid. And Hashem accepted our prayer, and we defeated the Kanani, and we named that area Chorma. We're traveling around Edomite territory. It's a long, long journey. And we have to travel back to the Yam Suf. So it's a really troublesome journey. We're going back to where we came from. And people get tired. And they start speaking against God. They start speaking against Moshe. They say, what'd you take us out of Egypt for? We're short on bread. We're short on water. And we're sick and tired of this lousy bread that we've been eating for 40 years. And Hashem sends fiery snakes to bite them. And many, many people drop dead. And the nation comes to Moshe and says, we've sinned that we spoke against God and against you. Please pray to God. He should remove this snake from upon us. Moshe prays for the nation, and God tells Moshe, make yourself a snake that's on a pole, put it on a banner, and whoever gets bitten will look up to that and be cured. And that's what Moshe does. And people continued getting bitten, but they continued looking up to the snake, and then they would get cured. Interesting thing. What do you need that for? What's the whole point of the gimmick? So they traveled to Ovot, and then Iye Avarim, and then they traveled to Nachal Zared, and then Ever Arnon, and we'll discuss the whole story here. A special stream broke out for them. And then we have the special song that Am Yisrael sings in honor of the well. And they send word to Sichon asking for permission to travel into Israel. Sichon refuses and attacks. And Am Yisrael defeats him. And then we have a similar story with Og, who comes out to attack us. And Moshe is scared of Og because Og has many merits. He did some righteous things in his life. And God tells Moshe, don't worry. And in fact, we defeat Og. And we conquer all of his territory. And this is the eastern side of the Jordan, which is territory almost as large as all of the land of Israel that we just conquered from Sichon and Og. So that's our parsha in a nutshell. Now let's review it and see a little bit more about what's going on here.
So do we later learn about 40 years in different parsha?
Parashat Chukat. The word Chukat means a statute. It means something that we don't exactly understand. The Torah begins with Zot Chukat HaTorah. This is the statute of the Torah. The Torah is going to describe to us two concepts that we don't exactly understand. One is what happens at death. We know the soul departs from the body. And here the Torah tells us something else happens. There's some kind of spiritual defilement called Tum'ah. And in fact, the Torah is taking us back to Gan Eden. The Torah is taking us back to the concept of death to begin with. Where does death come from? The whole idea of the sin of Eve that brings death to the world. The idea that there is a Yetzer Hara, there is a Satan, there is a Malach HaMavit, which Chazal say is one and the same. Chazal say the Yetzer Hara comes and incites the person down below. Then he goes up and he's the prosecutor up in Shamayim, and that he's the Satan up in Shamayim who says, look at what the guy did, and then he comes back down as the Malach HaMavis and takes a person's life. And when he takes a person's life, it is because a person's death stemmed from the first act of the Yetzer Hara, right, his going after his desire, his inclinations, that the Malach HaMavit, so to speak, puts a drop of his venom into the person when he dies. And when a person dies, that is the defilement. The body is not defiled, the soul is not defiled, it is the Malach HaMavis that sticks in defilement into the body. And so the body, after it is touched by the Malach HaMavis, then the body starts defiling. People who were super pious, who did not listen to the Yetzer Hara in their lifetime, well then, they don't die at the hands of the Malach HaMavis. If a person did not listen to the Yetzer Hara his whole life, so then when the Yetzer Hara goes up to Shamayim, he can't do any work as the Satan. And then when he comes back down, God doesn't let him take a person's life. That doesn't mean a person will live forever. It just means that God takes his life. And that's the idea that we find that a person, when he's pious, our sages say he doesn't defile when he's dead. It says that Rebbe, when he passed away, his body didn't defile anyone. How does that work? Well, now we understand how that works. So there's the secret concept of how death works and the idea of the defilement. And then there's another secret concept of Parah Aduma, where this red cow with all its procession, somehow the dead red cow that's being burned, its ashes mixed with water, when it's sprinkled on a person, that can purify him. We don't exactly understand how any of this works, but this is what the Torah says. We take a red cow that has solid red on it, no two black hairs in one spot, and it's never carried a yoke on it, meaning the cow has to be a cow that was never used for work. And our sages say there was once a non-Jew who had a Parah Aduma, this red cow born into his corral. And he called the sages and asked them, are you guys interested in buying it? So the sages said, yes, let's look it over. They went over the whole cow and they saw there were no black hairs. They went over the whole cow and they saw the cow was never used for carrying a load. So he set the price for a very, very high price. And he went home and said, oh, am I going to get rich now? So the Jews had agreed to pay that price for the cow. And he said, bring your money tomorrow and I'll give you the cow tomorrow. Then he said, let me do them one over. The Jews had a condition that I never put a yoke on this cow and make it carry anything. Until today I didn't. But but they won't know the difference. Tonight, I'm going to put a yoke on that red cow and let it carry it for 5 minutes and then let go of the yoke. And when they come tomorrow morning, I'll tell them, it's the same red cow, and I'll pull one over the rabbis. And their red cow, for generations, that red heifer will be defiled and unworthy, and they won't know it. And I'll make my money too. So that's what he did. That night, he put a yoke on the cow, let it walk around for 5 minutes, took the yoke off, and went back home to go to sleep, sleeping happily that tomorrow he's going to get all this money. The rabbis come the next day, and they have all the money with them. They say, 1 second, we've got to look over the cow again. They go to look over the cow again. They come back and say, sorry, no sale. So he says, why? And they say, because you put a yoke on it. And he says, no, I didn't. And they say, yeah, you did. And he says, but I didn't. And they say, yes, you did. And we're not buying the cow. How did they know? There are two hairs on the cow that are not bent, so long as it doesn't have a yoke. And once the yoke is on it, those two hairs get bent. And no one knew about these two hairs other than the rabbis, who had a tradition to look for those two hairs. So when they came the day before, they saw no yoke had been on it. So they said, we're willing to buy. But when they came the next day and they saw the two hairs were bent, they were able to tell that a yoke had been put on it, and he lost the deal. So we need a cow that is completely red. We need a cow that never carried a yoke. And then that cow is purchased by the public funds, and the Kohen, the second in command, Elazar, the Sagan of the Kohen, takes it outside the camp, slaughters it, and then burns it. And we add a lot of wood when we burn it. We want a lot of ashes with this cow, because we're going to save those ashes. The ashes from Moshe Rabbeinu lasted over half a millennium. They lasted till the end of the first temple. In the second temple, you had a total of 8 red cows. So you had a total of 9 in world history. And the 10th, it says, is going to be done by the Mashiach. So the Torah gets burnt. Everything gets burnt all together. The cow gets burnt. With its hide, with its blood, with even its excrement. Everything gets burnt together. And we throw into the fire cedar wood, that's a tall tree, and hyssop grass, which is a short tree, and a piece of red thread. And after we have this whole procession, we grind up all the ash and we collect it. And now we're going to use it for years. We're going to use that ash. If a person gets defiled, a person goes to a cemetery, a person is in the same house with a dead body, a person touches a dead body. So how does a person get purified from that? He waits 3 days. He comes to the Kohen. The Kohen puts a drop of ash into a huge bucket of water. And then he sprinkles from that water. Now, you could use that whole bucket to sprinkle on a person who was defiled, on vessels that were defiled, on 500 people who were defiled. So long as one drop touches them, they become purified from that water. They need sprinkling on the third day. Now, sometimes you can't get there on the third day. So sometimes you get there on the 100th day, right? It's 100 days after you became defiled. But it's a minimum of 3. And then the 7th day, meaning you get sprinkled at least 3 days later, maybe it's 100 days later, and that counts as day number 3, and then you wait 4, 5, 6, and on the 7th day, 4 days later, you get sprinkled a second time, and then the person becomes pure. This is the procession of the red cow. We don't know exactly how it works. There are a lot of details to these halachot. One very interesting detail is that in the period of the Second Temple, we had two rabbis named Tzadok and Baitus. Tzadok and Baitus were learning by their Rebbe Antignos Ish Soho, and he taught them, don't do mitzvos for the sake of the world to come. So they went back and started discussing this, and they said, if there were really a world to come, why shouldn't we do mitzvos for the sake of the world to come? Must be, there is no world to come. If there is no world to come, we might as well enjoy this world. But the rabbis won't let us, so we're going to debunk the rabbis and do whatever we want. And they started their own sects, Epicureanism. They started their sects that preached, just abide by the written law the way you see fit. Don't listen to the rabbis. Enjoy your life in this world, because there ain't no world to come. And they had a following, Tzadok and Baitus. And Tzadok and Baitus developed two sects called Tzadukim and Baitusim, otherwise known as the Karaites, Karaim, those who claim we go only by the verse. Karaim, like the word Mikra, the verse. So they developed these two sects, and these two sects took a very strong holding among the people. Now, the rabbis kept arguing and trying to dissuade the Karaites from their ways. Here you have good Jews who are behaving improperly. They're taking the Torah and redefining it the way they see fit, without tradition. They're denying the tradition. For much of the period of the Second Temple, the Karaites would just preach but wouldn't practice. And what the rabbis did was they would do many institutions, lehotzi miliban shel tzedukim, to try and dissuade the Sadducees, the Karaites, the tzedukim. And one of the things that they did was with regards to the red heifer. So let's imagine this. No one can enter the temple without a red cow, right? Because without the ashes, you can't become pure. And it's virtually impossible to stay pure your whole life. Every so often, people do get defiled. They do walk by a graveyard. They do have to go to a cemetery. They do touch a vessel that was in a cemetery. Remember, any watch, any pen, any metal instrument that comes in contact with a dead body or is under the same canopy as a dead body becomes as defiled as the body itself. So probably every pen we own, not every knife we own, I'm saying many of our knives stay at home, but every pen we own, every watch we own has probably been at a cemetery and they're as defiled as a corpse. Now, in order for a person to enter the temple, he has to be sprinkled, right? So what did the rabbis do? The rabbis said to the Sadducees, according to our tradition, if a person was defiled with a vermin, let's say you took a dead turtle and you touched it. So everyone agrees you're defiled. The Torah says, assuming that tzav in the Torah is the turtle. So that's one of the eight vermin that defiles a person. So a person touches a dead vermin. He goes to the mikveh. The Torah says he has one stage of purity. He is only completely pure when nightfall comes. When it becomes night. So the rabbi said to the Sadducees, the way you interpret the Torah, can a person do the red cow, the para aduma, after they've touched a dead turtle, gone to mikveh, but before nightfall? So the Sadducees said, no, you have to be completely pure. You have to wait until after nightfall. So the rabbi said, good. From now on, every person who is involved in the process of the red cow is going to be touched by a dead turtle, go to mikveh, and then deal with the red cow. According to you, the Sadducees, the red cow is therefore null and void. You don't have any way of becoming pure and entering the temple. Now, many Kohanim were Sadducees. Here, the rabbis forced their hands. You want to accept our tradition? Fine, you don't have a red cow. So the rabbis made this institution. Anyone who dealt with the red cow would be touched by a dead turtle or something else of that nature, go to mikveh, and then deal with the red cow. So everyone involved was kosher, according to Jewish tradition, non-kosher, according to simple reading of the text, without tradition. And this was one of the ways in which the rabbis were trying to corner the Sadducees and say, look, you guys are a bunch of talk, but you don't really believe what you're saying. So quit the talk and join everyone else and do what's right. Because they did this leniency, that everyone was somewhat defiled when they dealt with the red cow, the rabbis realized that people might take this a step too far and treat the red cow with tremendous leniency. So what the rabbis did to counteract that was they instituted stringencies with regards to the red cow that don't exist anywhere else in the Torah. For example, the children who would draw the water, the people who would draw the water for use with the red cow, had to be children that never set foot on regular soil. They had a special mountain, which they knew no one was ever buried there. And on top of that mountain, women would go, purify themselves, go up to that mountain, and give birth to their children there. And the children would never leave that mountaintop. They would grow up on that mountaintop, and when the time came to go and draw water for the red cow, these children would be taken by a special platform. And again, the idea is, let's say there's a dead body somewhere underground, so then the defilement shoots up until there's a chasm, until there is empty space. And then it doesn't shoot up beyond the next boundary. So what they do is, they take two oxen, put on top of the two oxen a plank, and put the kids on top of that. And this way, wherever they travel, they cannot become tameh. Now, we don't have such a stringency anywhere in Torah. Where do we put two kids to grow up on one mountaintop? Where do we say maybe there's tumah somewhere underground, you have to worry about it? Really, it doesn't exist. But the rabbis invented these stringencies to counterbalance that leniency that were making everyone defiled with a dead turtle and then mikveh and then not completely pure, they instituted a million stringencies. Another example is, they said when you draw the water, you must see it. There must be eye contact with the water from the minute you drew it from the well to the time you brought it to be used. If for a second you put it behind your back, we're worried maybe a dead turtle jumped in and out. Who's worried a dead turtle jumped in and out? You're not worried a dead turtle jumped in and out. But again, it's a far-out stringency that doesn't exist anywhere else in Torah, except for Parah Aduma. Chazal said, if we're going to institute this leniency, which was necessary at the time, look, we have to counteract it. Now, we see that Chazal were relatively successful. Look today. There's a minimum of Sadducees. We have a small little community of Karaites. How many Karaites are left?
Where are they?
Somewhere in the north.
So you're talking about the Samaritans?
I don't think so. Karaites. There's a community of Karaites. Yes.
They're Jews?
In the Jewish quarter, there's a shul of the Karaites. There's a community of Karaites in the Jewish quarter. Are they Jews? Well, some are and some aren't. They aren't observant Jews. But some going based on their definition of the text. So some of them will be descendants of good bona fide Jews, and others, well, that's a good question. How do they engage and how do they divorce? And how many of them are bastards? And how many of them are Jewish altogether? Because their process of conversion is not necessarily anywhere near our process of conversion. So it could be like the Reform movement, that they have a bunch of people that they call Jews that, in our book, they're not Jewish. They never underwent anything. Yes?
Why do objects that do not contain life in and of themselves, hands, watches, etc., how do they become defiled by death and that they've never had life? They're not.
Right. So this is a concept that the Torah teaches us here and in other places, that instruments can become tameh. That once the spirit of tumah comes, the spirit of tumah, you are correct, comes from a place where there was potential for life, where there was life, but once it's there, it can affect food, drink, and vessels. Wooden vessels, garment vessels. Somehow this spiritual defilement, once it's come to the world, can contaminate other things as well. You're right. It's not something I would have said, but the Torah says, yeah. Once it's there, it can contaminate other things.
So is this what you learned, where some rabbis have learned out that if you're a Kohen and you're in an airplane and the tumah shoots up from the ground, that the plane itself does not act as that platform that the children were carried on?
Right.
And that's why you need to enclose yourself in another...
Right.
Is that where they're getting this
from? Right,
but
that's
why
where...
Why does this plane not stop it?
I don't know. I don't know what their logic...
That would be the same thing as the platform, right?
Right, right. I'm not sure what their logic is in that. I don't know. I have to look. I don't know. No, it's a legitimate question. I don't know. I'm trying to remember. I don't remember. Okay. We have another concept. When there's a dead body in a enclosed environment, under a canopy, so then the defilement spreads under that canopy. Where is this relevant? In a hospital. Why is it relevant today? Because a Kohen, even though he's defiled, is prohibited from coming in contact with defilement a second time today. So Kohanim today, if they want to enter a hospital, have a problem. Because hospitals that are not set up in an orthodox manner will very often have dead bodies in the hospital, and the Kohen can't know when they do and when they don't. A Kohen wants to have elective surgery. Can he go into the hospital? We're not talking about a Kohen that needs the respirator. We're talking about a Kohen that wants to visit his wife after she gave birth, or wants to stand next to her when she gives birth. So Shaarei Tzedek has a system where most of the time the hospital is free of corpses. And when there is a corpse, So then they have a warning outside. They have a sign that says, Azarak Kohanim. And they notified on the loudspeakers. And the Kohanim go outside until they remove the corpse, and then they come back in.
From the hospital itself.
Correct.
Take it down to the morgue.
They do take it down to the morgue. After it's in the morgue, it's not a problem. That's part of how, because they make the morgue separate from the hospital.
No, it's a separate building.
It's a separate building.
They don't
right.
have to purify the hospital, though?
No.
So just once the corpse is gone, it's set in.
Correct. So we do that. The Sha'arei Tzedek does that.
Why is it important for a Kohen to not become defiled nowadays when you're not a temple?
Because there's a specific prohibition, even today, that a Kohen may not come in contact with the defilement of a dead body. It's relevant until today, even though he's defiled. Technically, he doesn't become more defiled, but he is again coming in contact with that source of defilement. And that's prohibited. Kohanim do not go to cemeteries. Kohanim don't go to funerals unless, here in Israel, if you go to the funeral parlors here in Jerusalem, so they have a separate section for Kohanim where Kohanim can go, and they ensure there's no overhang, there's no tree overhanging the corpse and the coin. And we had students of ours that had funerals, and Rav Bigun always goes to that section just out of the funeral parlor. You can't even tell, but there's really a gap in the ceiling where there's, if you look closely, you see that there's part of the ceiling that's just not there. There's like a skylight separating in order to make it two buildings. So he stands. First of all, a coin is permissible, is permitted, not only permitted, obligated to become defiled for his father, mother, sister, brother, son, daughter, wife. And secondly, we have a Chevra Kadisha, meaning the funeral parlor does deal. Today the coin doesn't have to do all the job himself. The concept of the vessels and the earthenware vessel, I think we'll skip for tonight. If you want to remind me tomorrow night, we'll get back to it. Let's move forward. Miriam passes away. Why? Doesn't say. Chazal say the passing of Miriam was written directly after the story of the red heifer to tell us that just as the sacrifices bring atonement to the world, so too the passing of the righteous brings atonement to the world. Why?
Just as what?
Just as sacrifices. The red heifer is a form of a sacrifice. Just as sacrifices bring about atonement, so too the passing of tzaddikim brings atonement. How so? So there are different interpretations. One interpretation is that when we look at a tzaddik that passes away, we stand back and say, wow, he died. We like to think we're immortal. It's very hard for us to really face death. It's rare that a person will really face death. Ordinarily, we like to think that we're going to keep ticking. We speak about death, but we don't really think about it. And when we look at someone who we look up to, and we say, boy, their clock stopped ticking, so then it forces us to realize that we're going to get there too. And that makes a person stop and think about life and his behavior. So that's one understanding as to why the passing of tzaddikim will bring atonement to the world, because the world actually stops and takes note. A person stops and thinks about his own life and what are they going to say about him when he passes. Another understanding is that it's like the red heifer. You look at it and you say, why? I don't understand. I don't understand why that person had to pass away. I know as much as I could know about the person, and from what I know, they were a really good person. So why did they pass away? And we don't have an answer. Just like we don't have an answer to all the questions about the process of the red heifer. We don't exactly know why. And the fact that we're willing to live with that question, that we move forward, that's part of the atonement. Meaning, in Judaism, we have two aspects. On the one hand, we try to understand as much as we can. On the other hand, how do we contend with what we do not understand? There are parts of the Torah that we don't understand. And as much as you explain, you still don't understand. The fact that you're willing to deal with it and move forward, that you say, just because I don't understand God doesn't mean He's not there. Just because I don't understand God doesn't mean I don't obey God. That's a tremendous merit for the people of Israel. And that's one of the challenges that a person faces repeatedly in life. When a person has to stand up to situations where he says, I don't understand. The Talmud tells us a fascinating thing. It says, everything Hashem does is with claims. It says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'aleinu ba'alila. The Medrash Tanhuma says, God comes to us, so to speak, with a ploy, with a claim. How so? God comes to Adam and tells him, don't eat from the fruit, because if you eat from the fruit, you're going to die. So that's not so fair, because technically God already said that there's going to be death in the world. You see, God wrote the Torah before he created the world. So our parsha, which discusses death, it was there before God said, don't eat from the forbidden fruit. So God's telling Adam, don't eat, because you will die. And then God already planned death into the world. So the Medrash says, yeah, when God said it, he was talking with a claim. He's saying, here's the system you have to work with. You want to know your system? You eat from the fruit, you will die. We sometimes mistaken that system for our capacity to understand God. That's not what God's saying. God's saying, I'll teach you the system you have to work with. That's what the Medrash is saying, is God's claim, so to speak. He says, don't eat so you won't die. Person says, wait a second, and if Adam wouldn't have eaten, what would have happened to all of this Torah? God, you were planning death before he ate from the fruit. So that's what the Medrash is saying. God isn't telling you why he brought death to the world. He's telling you the system you have to work with. When we have the Torah, that's what the prophet says. We learned it in Treyasar. That's what Esav said. Esav said, Grandpa Abraham, did you see him stay alive just because he was a pious person? I didn't notice him living forever. He died, even though he was pious. So Esav comes to Yaakov and says, why are you telling me that the rights to the firstborn is worth something? I don't see that righteous people live and don't die. Everyone dies. So what's in all of this? What's it all worth? And that's the challenge that a person faces with things he doesn't understand. The challenge is not to take that next step that Esav did. Meaning, there are always going to be parts of the Torah where we don't understand. And then we're often challenged to say, I don't get it, and it doesn't make sense, so leave me alone. So, the Talmud, we have a portion in Talmud that discusses Yisurim Shel Ahava, where God punishes a person out of love. And when I read that piece of Talmud, I walked away. I couldn't understand what I was reading. And one day I asked my father, and my father said to me, the Talmud isn't telling you why a person suffers. The Talmud's telling you that when a person suffers, it's not always because God's upset at him. And that's the idea that Rav Yochanan was telling people when Rav Yochanan would comfort people with a bone of his last child. He buried 10 children. He'd come with a bone and say, you see, what kind of comfort is there in that? The guy is mourning and you tell him, and I lost 10. What does that say? No, what Rav Yochanan was saying is, look, we don't always have answers, but you know what? Just because a person suffers doesn't mean God's upset at him. Look at me. I'm the chief rabbi of Israel. I wrote the Jerusalem Talmud. I'm doing everything I can to serve God, and I still lost 10 kids, Rav Yochanan says. What he was saying is, don't take it personally. There are things we don't understand. Don't take that next step. And that explains the Torah Tmima, is the message of why when a tzaddik dies, it's an atonement for the people. Because the people have to contend with the idea that they don't understand why did he have to die. They don't have an answer to that question, and they have to keep functioning. They have to ask themselves, wait a second, would he have wanted me to keep mitzvos or not? Of course he would have wanted me to keep mitzvos, but I don't have an answer to the question. And that's one of the central temptation points in all of Judaism. Do I take that next step? And on a different occasion, we discussed this vis-a-vis Avraham Avinu, where Avraham Avinu, that was his test. We discussed it in the Akedah, where Avraham Avinu was the epitome of a test. God tells him, this is your future, this boy. And then God shows up and says, slaughter him. Wait a second, you're contradicting yourself. It's not I don't understand you. It's you don't seem to understand you. You don't seem to make sense. God, you told me one way. Now you're telling me the other way. And Avraham didn't have an answer to that question. The test for Avraham was to continue, even though he didn't have an answer. And that, according to some, is the idea that when Miriam passes away, there's an atonement for the people, because there is no reason given for Miriam's passing. Moshe and Aaron, we know their sin. What did Miriam do wrong? She spoke Lashon Hara? Never says that for that she was going to die. Doesn't say that. So we don't know why she passed away. Right, we don't know. Just like the red cow. We don't know. And yet we keep functioning. We don't have to have answers for everything. Okay, to be continued, Bezalel.